And now I would like to pass the floor to the keynote speakers. The first presenter are going to be Professor Jaakko Mononen from Finland. The title of his lecture is What is Animal Welfare and How Can We Measure It? Professor Mononen, please present your lecture.
Okay, can you hear me? Obviously you can. Okay, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I want first thank the organizers of this Wellman conference for inviting me to give this presentation on animal welfare and how it can be measured. My aim today is to give you a brief introduction to the topic, only a brief introduction, and I encourage you to learn more, for example, from the textbooks that I have used as references in my paper, that is, that you can find in the proceedings. This is the outline of my talk. In my talk, I first define and explain animal welfare. Secondly, I'll give some examples of how animal welfare can be measured. And thirdly, I'll say a few words of how to ensure animal welfare on farms. And fourthly, I'll present my conclusions. Defining animal welfare may seem an easy job, but it is not. There is not one universally accepted definition for animal welfare. So why then it is so difficult for the scientist to define animal welfare? One of the main reasons is that animal welfare is a multidimensional scientific and also societal concept. And in my presentation, I will speak mainly about this scientific part in pink in the picture. And this includes also animals. Where does this come from? Can I move at all? I'll mainly speak about the scientific part, which includes also animal sentience as a topic. And this topic is quite close to philosophy, actually. So this is probably the most cited scientific definition of animal welfare. But in my view, at least this short version of this definition, it fails to tell the whole story. It does not define what is meant by this state of an animal, what is mentioned here. The original definition by Professor Donald Broom, this first definition there, it has been elaborated further. And this is one of my favorite definitions for animal welfare. This definition shows that animal welfare includes not only physical but also mental states of the animals. And finally, John Webster says the same very briefly. Welfare of an animal is good if it has good physical health and biological functioning and it is happy, or at least it is not suffering. So, in the past, the welfare of our production animals, at least, meant mainly that they were healthy and reproduced and produced well. However, later it has been acknowledged that an animal may be, for example, frustrated if it cannot fulfill also its behavioral needs, or it may feel pleasure when it can fulfill its behavioral needs. So this is this fit and happy part of this picture. Some people in turn state that natural living is of paramount importance to the welfare of animals. Typically, farmers emphasize more biological functioning of the animals, and consumers emphasize natural living of the animals, at least in Europe. Since there are these various approaches, it is not a surprise that it is not always easy to agree in our society what is good for the welfare of our farm animals. Probably some of you may question that animals have feelings, at least in the sense that we humans have. However, the European Union has acknowledged very officially that mammals and birds and even fish are or may be sentient beings, and that this view should count, for example, in formulating EU's common agricultural policy. In fact, this Lisbon Treaty does not define sentience, but according, for example, Webster, sentience means that animals have feelings or emotions that matter to them. The current scientific knowledge supports the view that animals are not mere stimulus-response automates, but emotions evolved to modify animals' responses to their environment. In other words, emotions have had adaptive value in the course of the evolution. And only on top of that, some animals, like humans, may have also higher cognitive abilities. It is worth noting that these higher cognitive abilities, or consciousness, or conscious awareness, or whatever we want to call them, they are not a prerequisite for sentience. Recently, it has been hypothesized that rather the opposite is true. But you might ask, at what level are then the various animal species that we keep for food and other purposes? This is one suggestion, and of course, me and my brother there, we are at the highest cognitive level, and you can decide which one of these two animals at the highest level is me and my brother. Then a few words about explaining animal welfare, and why do animals have welfare problems? I have explained this in more detail in my paper that you can find in the proceedings. And I have explained with many examples how animal welfare constitutes from the interaction of an animal with its environment. However, perhaps I did not emphasize strongly enough the complicated nature of this interaction. But probably it is easy to understand that good housing environment with bad management can lead to worse welfare state than good management in a less good housing environment. I'll give an example. In many cases, lameness may be a bigger problem for dairy cows in a loose housing system than in a tie stall system, although in principle, loose housing should promote feet and hoof health. One of the key management factors in this example is removing the manure often enough. But then to measuring animal welfare. Next, I'll present a few selected examples of methods how to measure animal welfare. But how can we measure subjective experiences of animals, or can we do it at all? In fact, we cannot measure the subjective experience of the animals directly. Instead, we have to infer the welfare of animals indirectly from their behavior, physiology, health, and productivity. So these are the main classes for assessing animal behavior. Here we are asking from these blue foxes how much they are willing to work to get from a biomass floor to a sand floor. And working in this case means pressing a lever. So the animal is now pressing their lever. After having pressed for a demanded number of times, the number of times that we experimenters demand from the animals, they get 4-minute access to the sand floor. That is the reward that they get. And after that 4 minutes, the system forces the animals back to the wire mesh floor, and they have to start pressing the lever again to get back to the sand floor. So that is how they were working, and now you saw how these gates moved from this wire mesh floor, which is the floor that the farm foxes have in their cages, to a sand floor, which they do not have typically in their cages on commercial farms. And this brown curve here, this upper curve here, it shows that increasing the demanded workload decreases the number of visits to the sand floor during the 3-hour experimental sessions. But this decrease is not, however, as steep as when the foxes work to get from biomass floor to another biomass floor. So we had also experimental sessions where they were not working for to get access to sand floor, but also from one biomass to another biomass floor. And the curve for this biomass situation is the blue one in the picture. These so-called demand curves indicate that the sand floor has some importance to the foxes and their behavior, and their welfare might be improved if they were kept on sand floors. And then a more detailed behavioral analysis reveals that obviously the foxes can and want to do behaviors on the sand floor that are not possible or appropriate on the biomass floor, like playing and wall jumps, things that this animal is doing there. So this sand floor acts at least as an enrichment to these animals. That is something that they cannot do in normal cages, and they do not do it usually. They can do some wall jumps without anything to throw or anything to jump at. And they also do some digging when they have this sand floor. In my second behavioral example, we can see stereotypic behavior. Stereotypies are behavior patterns without obvious goal or function, like this tongue rolling by this dairy cow. And hundreds of millions of farm animals perform stereotypies daily in the world. In most cases, stereotypies develop because of frustrating environment, probably causing mental suffering to the animals. While using physiological welfare measures, we many times want to assess the stress experienced by the animals. Here we have an example showing how transportation increases cortisol levels in plasma of calves. This hormone is produced by the adrenal cortex and used very, very widely as a stress indicator in animal welfare research. Cortisol can be analyzed from blood, urine, feces, saliva, milk, and even hairs. If animals encounter stressing situation often enough, this may have long-term effects on their physiology. In this example, you can see that negative treatment of pigs, meaning slapping them and shouting to them, it leads not only to elevated cortisol levels in blood, indicated with the red circles, but also to increased adrenal size, indicated with the blue circles. My first health example shows that sometimes the first impression of management methods is not necessarily true. This broiler harvester here may look not so animal friendly at first sight, but the results show that harvester causes less injuries to the animals than collecting the animals manually. So animal welfare research can reveal these kind of things also. My second health example illustrates how spending some time observing the behavior of the animals may help to reveal health problems better and earlier. You can imagine the economical benefits to the farmers from this enhanced lameness detection. The lameness scoring system used in this study is based and originally used in scientific research, but modification to this method can be easily used also as feasible tools on farms. Quite many animal welfare scientists are very hesitant to use productivity as a welfare measure, since in many cases high productivity may, for example, risk the health of the high-producing individuals. However, this example here shows how better treatment of animal leads to better productivity in many animal species. Good treatment means less fear, and less fear means less stress and less need for the animals to use their bodily resources for coping with stress. And all in all, good human-animal relationship is one of the most efficient ways to improve animal welfare. There are dozens of welfare measures, and choosing the measures depends on what is being studied, of course. However, it is worth bearing in mind that the complicated interaction of the animal and its environment, together with the fact that there are differences between the animals in their responses, means that no single measure or single study can tell the whole truth of animal welfare. To illustrate this, I return back to my earlier example showing blue foxes' high motivation to get an access to a sand floor. Another study concluded that foxes with access to a sand floor had less stereotypies than animals kept on traditional biomass floors only. However, in a third study, we noticed that foxes avoided to rest on the sand floor in the wintertime. In other words, they preferred the unnatural biomass as a resting site. We assume that this was simply for thermoregulatory reasons. So in the course of the autumn, the sand floor got icy and was no more comfortable resting site for the foxes, and they preferred, therefore, this biomass floor. Another of my examples already showed how final conclusions should be made. They should be based on several studies using several welfare measures, as in the case of this review paper by Hemsworth and Barnett. And then only a few words of how to ensure animal welfare. The science of animal welfare is about 50 years old field of science, and it aims at finding methods to improve animal welfare. So it has some implications to the society, and one implication are these five freedoms and welfare quality, animal welfare principles and criteria. So one of the main achievements of this field of science are these so-called welfare quality principles and criteria. These four principles and 12 criteria act as a comprehensive checklist for anyone working with farm animals or any other animals. So if you check that all these things are well for the animals, probably animals' welfare is good. And then it is time for my conclusions. These 5 points are my take-home message to you. Ultimately, welfare is a mental state of an individual animal. Welfare results from a complicated interaction of an animal with its environment. Welfare can be measured only indirectly using behavioral, physiological, health, and productivity measures. And a diverse range of measures should be used in animal welfare studies. And finally, the science of animal welfare can help to improve animal welfare on farms. And with these pictures of obviously happy animals, I thank you for your attention, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.